Hello and welcome to another Windows 10 webinar series. My name is Jeff Alexander. I'm a senior technical evangelist here at Microsoft in Sydney office. Today we're going to be talking about Windows 10 and also in regards to Windows 10 deployment. Now we know a lot of organizations are thinking about deployment of Windows 10. So this session is really talking about what is actually new with Windows 10 deployment, how you can actually prepare for it. And I'm going to show you a couple of demos in regards to doing a managed deployment with some of our tools. And so that will hopefully give you a good idea of what we're actually doing in regards to deployment. So I'm so confident in the upgrade process for Windows 10. I did an upgrade on my current machine to Windows 10. To a later build of Windows 10, and that went fine. It was an in-place upgrade, and that's what we see a lot of organizations actually doing. So I'm going to move on to the next slide. If you need to get in touch with me, my details are up there, which is http://about.me/jeffa36. Now, I'm going to switch out over to a demo slide, in regards to how to go about doing a managed upgrade. I'm going to kick off an upgrade of Windows 10 from Windows 7. So let me just start my sharing. All right. So I'm going to switch over to a machine that I currently have running Windows 7. Now, of course, we don't want our users to go to Windows Update on their machines like we would do, say, if we had a home machine. We don't want our users going over to Windows Update. We want to be able to manage that upgrade process through our tools. So I've got a server running in my environment over here, and if you look at my Hyper-V environment, I've got a number of machines running in a Windows Server 2012 R2 domain, and essentially what I've got is I've got a domain controller running the forest functional mode of 2012 R2, and I've got an admin box that I use to manage all of that as well. I've got all the group policy settings for Windows 10 added into my central store so that allows me to manage some of the upgrade, and I'll show you that in a demo a little bit later on. And I have a management server. Now, that management server has a config manager, technical preview 3 on that machine. It has the MDT 2013 Update 1, which supports Windows 10 in-place upgrades. And it also has the ADK, which allows us to do some provisioning stuff as well. So normally, obviously, you would push this out in some other method, but I'm just going to go and click on my lighttouch.vbs file and kick off an upgrade process for Windows 10. And essentially, this is going to go and look at my task sequences that I have on my MDT server, and it's going to allow me to choose the upgrade that I want to actually do. And of course, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do Windows 10 in-place upgrade, and we'll talk a little bit more about why we're actually doing that a little bit later. But I wanted to kick off this process at the beginning of this, so that we can then come back to it and show you what it actually looks like. So right now, I'm just going to type in my password. Right now, this machine is running Windows 7, and we're going to move it directly to Windows 10. Now, essentially, what we're doing here is that we are running, and if I go and look at Task Manager, and I go and look at some of the processes that are currently running, essentially what this part is actually doing is it's calling Setup Host and Setup Prep, which is part of the task sequence that we're actually running. And you notice that Setup Host, and Setup Prep is running. Setup Prep is running in the background prior to the Windows part of the setup to prepare this machine to upgrade to Windows 10 from Windows 7. After we do that preparation part, we will hand it over to the Windows 10 upgrade process. And essentially what that means is that we will essentially let Windows do the work for the upgrade process itself, and we won't have to actually really touch it after that point. So I'm just going to let that run, and then later on after we go through a few slides, is I'm going to come back and show you what the task sequence actually looks like, and then also come back to that upgrade to see how the upgrade actually progressed through. So let's just switch back out. Now that we've kicked that off, I'm going to go and switch back over to my slides real quick. And I'm just going to move over to that. And I wanted to just start with Something that we get asked a lot in regards to previous operating systems, and we got asked a lot of this with Windows XP, is how many days till the end of support for Windows 7 for a previous operating system. So it's 1,553 days to the end of support for Windows 7. So that's the time frame that you need to get off Windows 7 and move to Windows 10. So that is the time frame that we're actually looking. If we look back at Windows XP, we gave organizations and users 7 years to do that upgrade. So if you still got Windows XP out there, you probably should have moved a long, long time ago. We understand why there's cases where you have to be on that. But this, the date I want you to really keep in your head is January 14th, 2020. That is when we are ending support for Windows 7. So that's your time frame to get off that operating system. Now, when it comes to upgrades itself, we're changing the way that we actually do upgrades for Windows. And we're moving to a technology we call Windows as a Service. And this is all about establishing a rhythm. And this is a very much a change to the thinking that we had previously with Windows in the way that we did deployments. Previously on Windows, you would do what we call forklift upgrades. And upgrades, we would release operating systems every so 3 or 4 years or so. This is going to change in Windows 10 in the sense that we're going to be releasing feature updates about 3 to 4 times a year. We'll still release patch updates on Patch Tuesday or Patch Wednesday, as they're called in Australia. But generally what we're going to be doing is we're going to be establishing an ongoing rhythm to get that. And what this is this chart is really showing you is a conceptual way that this actually looks and how, and I'm going to expand on that a little bit as we go through. But it kind of gives you an idea of what we're trying to do. Now, if you look at this, we kind of start when Windows is being developed, the engineering teams or the operating systems groups will test daily builds of Windows as we go through. And that's happening right now with the Threshold 2 release, which is actually due out in November. People are testing this release for issues, for compatibility. And then after we've actually tested that for a few months, generally around about 4 months, we will make that build available to Microsoft's internal team. And we have an internal group called the Microsoft Elite Program that allows people, and there's thousands of people that are signed up for this. And that allows us to do broad internal adoption. Today I just upgraded to a TH2 or Threshold 2 release called Build 10.5.65, I believe. And that allows us to do a lot of that internal testing well before it gets to customers. And these are essentially called branches. And we've had branches for quite some time with Windows in the past, but it's a lot more visible nowadays because we're moving to this Windows as a Service model where we're having more frequent upgrades that are going to be sent out to customers. So after we actually do that, some of you may have actually been on the Microsoft Insider preview program that we had. Right now that's around about 5 to 6 million people that are on this. And these are people that want to actually get the latest features and see what Microsoft's doing in regards to the next version of Windows. So they're actively testing this version, providing feedback through the Windows Feedback program, providing feedback through the User Voice website, uservoice.windows.com, and allowing us to test a lot of this stuff and allow these people to do a lot of the heavy lifting in regards to compatibility testing, which we didn't have in the past with previous versions of Windows. And then what we actually do is we move to what we call the current branch. And essentially, this is what was released on the 29th of July. So the current branch was released on the 29th of July, which was only about 12 weeks ago. Seems like a lot longer than that, but we're now sitting at 110 million plus people that have upgraded to Windows 10. And that is, those people are on build 10.2.40, which is the current branch. Now, before it gets to businesses, what we call the current branch for business, the current branch for business is what a lot of organizations are going to be deploying broadly into their organizations. And the current branch for business is gives us a lot of that testing time frame, and I'll give you some breakdowns of how this breaks out from a time frame point of view. But the current branch for business is what organizations are going to really deploy to the broadest part of their fleet internally at their organizations. Then we have this concept of what we call rings. And if you were on our Insider Preview program, you would have known that there is a fast ring and a slow ring. So overnight, we announced a build 10 549 was released to the fast ring for Windows 10 for phones. So it means that you have more control over who gets what builds, and you can create these rings within your organization. So if you want to have a set of users that are getting the versions of Windows faster than they are, you know, other parts of the business, you can differentiate this up through rings. And then internally at Microsoft, we have what we call an MSIT ring. There's also the Windows Insider Fast, and there's the Windows Insider Slow. The Windows Insider Slow means that the testing time frame for the people that are on the fast ring, they test that version before we release it to the slow ring. So there's a whole way for us to actually establish this rhythm. Now, Windows 10 is the last major release of Windows. We will then move into this rhythm of more regular updates. So that's kind of how we're moving forward with Windows. And it's an important concept because a lot of organizations are used to this whole rip and replace scenario with Windows. And we're moving away from that. We're moving to an in-place upgrade scenario. So it's a little bit different type of scenario to get your head around in regards to how that actually works. Now, to further establish and talk about what you would deploy inside your organization, I wanted to kind of expand on that a little bit so that you can kind of see how it lays out and the types of machines that you would consider for this. So you look at what we're actually doing in each of these stages. In ongoing engineering development, that's where we're kind of doing the whiteboard and where we're asking for feedback and asks from the internal teams. And then on the insider preview branch, what we're getting from the insiders is specific feature and performance feedback. And that is fed through us through the Windows feedback application. We do application compatibility validation on this, and this particular time frame is around about 4 months. And then we do the current branch to allow us to deploy to appropriate audiences through Windows Update for Business. That allows us to test and prepare for broader deployment before we move that out broadly to our other parts of the business. And this kind of maps back to what type of machines we're actually thinking about. We said all along with the Windows Insider Preview that if you should be putting this on a secondary device, a lab machine or something like that. We know a lot of people didn't do that and they put it on their primary machines, but the recommendation is to put it on lab machines. On the current branch, this is where you would start your initial pilots internally inside your organization, early adopters, IT devices. A lot of the IT team would probably have Windows at that point. Then further on down the track, you would have your information workers and your general population being deployed the current branch for business. Now, the time frame for when these things are going to be available, the current branch was available on the 29th of July. Current branch for business is going to be available in November, giving us a four-month time frame for you to test on the current branch, which is the build 10240, with your initial early adopters, and then do your broader deployment through Windows Update for Business, which will also release at that time frame. We also have a different SKU, a totally isolated SKU called the LTSB SKU, or Long-Term Servicing Branch SKU. This is designed to be deployed to mission-critical systems, systems that you don't want any changes. These could be specialized system, point-of-sale devices, factory floor type of devices that you don't want any changes. Now, where do you actually look to do those changes? Of course, if you look at the current branch versus the current branch for business, we have the ability to control how users are getting those updates. And as I said when I was showing you the update to Windows 7, we don't want users to go out to Windows Update and just get blasting updates down over the network. So we want to be able to defer updates. You can do that in two options. You can do it in advanced options within settings and update and recovery. But you're going to want to actually push this out through group policy. And essentially what you're going to need is you're going to need the updated group policy templates, ADMX and ADML files. We have a download for those if you go to grouppolicy.biz, which is B-I-Z. There is a link to download all the updated ADMX and ADML files. copy those over to your sysvol folder on your domain controller, put them into your central store, and then you'll have the ability to be able to do all those. Now, it doesn't matter which way you're actually doing this. We're not going to affect if you're using existing tools. So if you've got WSS or Config Manager, it really doesn't matter. You can control all this through those tools as well. So, and if we look at this further through and look at the device, you know, how we actually compare the current branch for business versus the long-term servicing branch, there are some key differences that we have in this. The current branch for business is going to have all the tools and all the applications in there, whereas the long-term servicing branch, we remove some of the stuff out of there. First of all, we don't have Edge. We don't only have IE11. We don't have support for Universal Office and some first-party universal apps. It is designed to be run as a specialized system, and it is designed to only run particularly one task. You won't get the latest features as they were released. Think of the long-term servicing branch a lot like what it was like with XP or something like that. So essentially means that you don't get releases for 2 to 3 years. You don't get updates. It's a little bit different. It's designed for that. And even if you look at the UI itself, it actually looks very different as well from a UI perspective. Now, if you're an MSDN customer, you can download the ISO for Windows 10 Enterprise in the long-term servicing branch. So you can download that, have a look at it if you want to play around with it. It is Windows 10, but it's very limited in regards to what it has in it because it's designed for specialized systems. Now, I want to talk about a little bit about the time frames and map this out to, what do we think about in regards to the servicing options, when to deploy, how that's going to lay out for you within your organization. Now, typically, when I talk to customers, they say that their deployment projects are generally can be anywhere from 18 months to 2 years. We want to move into a 12-month deployment time, and letting the different branches do all the work in regards to upgrades. Okay, so if you look at the Insider preview, which right now we have the Insider, that allows us to evaluate those specific features, that particular version, provide feedback. So you might have a set of users in your organization that would like to be on the Insider preview. And that allows them to then go and see what the new features are, what are the things that have been changed in Windows 10 as we go forward, and then allows them to provide that feedback directly to Microsoft. Where you're going to be doing your pilot, though, and this is a four-month time frame that you have, is you have a four-month time frame to deploy the current branch which right now is the build 10240. That allows you to deploy to your appropriate audiences within your organization, and allows you to test and prepare for broader deployment. We see this time frame being a four-month time frame. Now, if you don't fall into these time frames, you won't be able to get security updates after that. So we want to make sure that you're moving into this type of deployment model. And then you have an eight-month window to do your current branch for business. This is your broader deployment, and that allows you to actually do that. So, you know, it's a different model and it's a different mindset that we're thinking about. And if you break it down even a little bit further, you're going to have some overlap within this. Okay, so you're going to see some overlap. You're going to have some users that are on a pilot stage. Some people are in the deploy stage. And you're going to have some overlapping where people are in the deploy stage and some people are in the evaluate and pilot stage. And right now, we are, if you look at July, that's where we had the current branch. This whole cycle doesn't really start until November, where we actually get a current branch for business. The one thing we want to make sure of is that you don't get into the scenario of deploying the long-term servicing branch. It's not the answer. We want to get into a continuous rhythm for Windows 10 to make sure of that. Now, with each release of the current branch, there's going to be each feature release that we do, there will be brand new ISO images that are going to be made available in the normal channels, meaning that you'll be able to use those images to upgrade your existing machines or use your to create custom images. The feature updates will also be published through Windows Update or WSS to enable you to upgrade those devices very easy that are currently already on Windows 10. So we'll push it into all those different tools that allow you to continue to update those machines itself. So you can defer, you know, you can also defer updates, and you can defer updates for a 4 month. What we'll do is we'll allow a 4 month deferral period where users can decline to install Windows, and we want and then they will install anytime within that 8 month time frame. Okay, so if they've deferred for 4 months, then they move into that 8 month time frame to install that update. So they have 8 months to do that update within that time frame. So we want to make sure that we're trying to get customers into this rhythm of what we're actually doing in regards to that. Okay. So one of the things we're talking about, and we have been talking about for a while since Windows 10 was released, is this notion of what we call the end of wipe and reload. A lot of customers that I talk to have been involved in deployment projects. You probably have been involved in deployment projects. What we want to move to is what we call an in-place upgrade, as in upgrading over the top of your existing operating system. So we believe now that the Windows setup routines are so robust that you can move away from rip and replace and forklift upgrades. So you can move to a managed in-place upgrade, which is what I showed you just a few minutes before. I'll show you the task sequence and how that actually looks like, to allow us to track the upgrades and be able to do that over the existing operating system. What this is going to drive is this is going to allow you to move to that 4 month, 8 month deployment process and be able to deploy Windows faster, be able to remove a lot of the time it takes to actually do a lot of these updates. And we want to make sure you move, we want to help customers move to that. We also have a new process as part of this called runtime configuration. This is really supporting BYOD type scenarios. It's customization without actually imaging the machine. Andrew will be talking about that next week in a little bit more detail. The goal, though, for us is really to reduce the validation that you have to do from an application compatibility point of view and reduce the deployment costs that we have in regards to this. And we talked about that in the enterprise one. It's something on the order of $1,900 per PC per year to do major upgrades. And we want to be able to reduce that that process to allow you to get into this rhythm. But the goal really is to get onto Windows 10 and get into that that rolling rhythm of being able to upgrade the systems. Now, of course, it still means that you've got to consider, and there's going to be cases where you would not do an in-place upgrade. So with Windows 10, from an app device compatibility perspective, hardware, if you have a machine that has the hardware requirements to run Windows 7, then you have a machine that's going to run Windows 10, and oftentimes they run Windows, the machine runs better on Windows 10 from a hardware requirements point of view. So we're seeing very strong desktop app capability for apps that are in the store and also Win32 applications that are compatible. And the reason we're seeing that is because we've done a lot more testing through the Insiders program and also through the internal testing that's been done. We've opened this up a lot more than we did in previous versions of Windows, so there was a lot more app compatibility testing that would go on. We continue to invest in Internet Explorer from an enterprise point of view, and I'll talk about what you need to do in a second from Internet Explorer's point of view, because a lot of customers are still on older versions of Internet Explorer, so you're going to need to get to IE11 by a certain date. So when we talk about IE11, IE11 has this new has this mode called Enterprise Mode, and essentially what this allows us to do is to help with compatibility applications for legacy compatibility issues with legacy web applications. So if you have a web application inside your organization that requires IE8, we do a lot of, with enterprise mode, what we do is we do a lot of document type overrides, and it also will tell the application that it's actually running in IE8 mode. So that is an option that is in Internet Explorer 11. So there's a site discovery toolkit as well so that you can see how users are browsing. So if a user needs to go to an internal web application that requires IE8, we will switch that automatically over to enterprise mode. And then when they move to the edge and when they do their edge browsing to Facebook or whatever, we'll automatically switch out of enterprise mode and switch back into IE11 mode. All these features are carried forward into Windows 10, You need to actually get to IE11 on Windows 7. If you're still running Windows 7, you need to get to IE11 before 2016. We are ending support for all previous versions of IE in January of 2016. So that means IE10, IE9, IE8, all that extended support is going out with those versions. There's a blog post here that you can go and have a look at to find out more about enterprise mode, because that's been around for quite some time, but a lot of customers don't know about it. So have a look, and you can see more about that. Now, there's obviously a number of choices that you have. We will continue to support the wipe and load scenarios, and this is a traditional process of image engineering that's been around for quite some time. And essentially, it's doing the capture process, capture data and settings, deploy a custom WIM file, inject drivers, install apps, do all that kind of stuff. That's still an option for all scenarios if you want to actually do that. But really, we want people to move to what we call an in-place upgrade and let the Windows setup do a lot of the work. We've done a lot of work in the setup program to make sure that we have a robust process because we preserve all data, settings, apps, drivers. Now, that machine that I kicked off that update on, that machine was domain joined. When I do that in-place upgrade, that's going to preserve all my domain settings. It'll preserve all my smart card settings if I log on that way. This is recommended for all those devices that are actually running Windows 7, 8, or 8.1. And we want to make sure that it's a smooth process and let Windows do that work. We've dramatically reduced the size of task sequences in both Config Manager and also in MDT. Now, if you have a BYOD scenario in your organization, this allows you to take a device that might be running Windows 10 Pro and convert that device over to Enterprise simply by adding a small PPKG file into that. And what that can also do is it can remove all the crapware that might be on a particular machine, add organizational apps and configuration. And that's a new capability scenario that allows you to take these devices and not have to re-image them in order for the user to use the device as a device they buy themselves, but use it in the enterprise for work. And we'll talk more about that in an upcoming webinar. Now, to moving to in place, we obviously, for us to get to this point, there was a lot of work that we had to actually do. So for enterprises, we support Windows 7, 8, 8.1. Now, consumers will go to Windows Update, but you, as an enterprise, you don't want your users going out and flooding your network with that. So you want to be able to use tools like Config Manager MDT to manage the process. And we can do that. It'll use standard Windows 10 WIM file, very straightforward if you've done image engineering before on Windows 7 or that kind of thing. You will understand the process that we're going to be there. It automatically preserves all the apps that are there, that are on there. It'll look and check to see if there's anything that doesn't actually work and remove that. Where we've actually seen some issues is with third-party virus applications. A lot of organizations have an SOE that has a particular version of a virus software on their machine, but that version hasn't been upgraded to support Windows 10 yet. The vendor might have a version that works with Windows 10, but a lot of organizations haven't rolled that out yet. So that will be removed, and you'll use the Windows Defender application as your default browser after that point. So it's really reliable. It's very fast. The update will take, I just did an update this morning from build 1040 to build 10565. It took about a half an hour. Now, if there was any issues with that particular upgrade, we do automatic rollback for any of those encounters. Now, we started this process when we went from, a lot of people ask us, you allow people now to go from Windows 7 to Windows 10 directly. Well, we started this process and piloted this process from 8 to 8.1. If you had Windows 8, you might have noticed that process to get 8.1 was a new process to allow us to do that from Windows Update. We also, during that time frame, we piloted a process with a customer to upgrade them from 7 to 8.1 as a learning process. We had a customer come to us and say, hey, look, we're on Windows 7. We don't want to go to Windows 8, but we want to go to Windows 8.1. So we piloted that process with that customer. And essentially what we did there is that we made, there's a KB article that, KB, the upgrade process is actually a KB. We wrapped that up into an executable. that executable was shipped down to the machine, and then the user was able to go and do 7 to 8.1. We got a tremendous amount of feedback, and we integrated that back into the Windows 10 process and also provided a lot of additional capabilities around automation and logging. The one thing that you do have to worry, and I know that we are working with ISVs on disk encryption right now, if you have a machine running Windows 7 and you've got BitLocker enabled, that's totally fine. That'll work, and we'll be able to upgrade that machine in place without having to turn any disk encryption off. If you have third party, though, we don't support those yet. We are working with ISVs on that for that. Okay, so I'm going to check back with my upgrade. Hopefully by now my upgrade should probably be finished, but I'm going to also show you some of the tools and how I actually went about that. And I'm also going to show you an upgraded tool that we've got available that's going to help you with the deployment process as well. So let's have a look at that. I'm just going to share my screen. All right, you should be seeing my screen now. So the first thing I want to do is show you this tool we called the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit. Now, this tool is a free tool that you can download. You need to just go to microsoft.com/map, M-A-P. We just released version 9.3 overnight, and essentially what this version now supports is Windows 10. And essentially what this tool is it's an agentless inventory service that allows you to go out and scan your network, and it'll go and scan and grab WMI data from those machines to assess, and in the case of this particular talk that we're talking about today, is to assess readiness of your existing fleet to go to a new operating system. So we've added, for the desktop piece, we've added Windows 10 readiness in this. Okay, so now we're able to assess the readiness of your fleet, of your machines, to see if they are actually ready to run Windows 10. And I've already run all this information on my environment, and you can see if I go down to this, I actually have 232 machines that are able to run Windows 10. A couple of things that MAP actually does is it actually looks for machines that are currently ready to run Windows 10, or they would be ready to run Windows 10 after you got upgrades post-update. Okay, so you have to look at the currently ready means we're going to get all the drivers and all the system updates, all those from the actual Windows 10 setup itself. Whereas if afterwards, you'd probably have to go to the manufacturer to get those updates. The other thing the tool does is it generates reports, and we know how much we all like generating reports. So if you generate a Windows 10 readiness report, it creates a report, and in this case, it's in an Excel spreadsheet. That allows me to see some data, and you notice when I'm pulling data in, I'm getting various information about the machine itself. You can see some of the machines had insufficient data. We didn't know what kind of video adapter was there. It tells us what operating system that it's currently running, the service pack level that it's actually on. We have some assessment values. What we're actually looking for is minimum system requirements and free disk space. So for an X64 machine, you notice we need 20 gig of free disk space to be able to do the upgrade. So it'll go and scan and check to see whether we're able to actually do that. And then we have, a devices summary to tell you the devices, the manufacturer, we're pulling all this data in about the machines. We did add some additional WMI counters into Windows 10 to get additional data into this. I can't remember exactly what those are, but there's additional data that you can pull into Config Manager so that you can get that inventory data. These are our devices and our assessment information for the devices. We can also go and see the application versions, the applications that are currently installed on these machines. So we do a basic inventory of the device. The other thing, if you go down into the environment tab on this and we go to the Windows environment, here we're actually seeing the number of clients and the number of servers. Actually, it's usage tracking that I wanted to look at. Because as we start to deploy Windows 10, we'd like to be able to see how we're tracking. So this, if you go look at usage tracking, this is telling me the number of desktops and the operating system that they're currently running at this point in time. So here you down the bottom, you can see that there's four machines that are currently running Windows 10, so we can track and see how we're actually going with the update to Windows 10. So go and download the Map Toolkit. It's a free tool. A lot of customers don't know about it. It gives you a lot of good data to come back and pull information out. The great thing about this is that you can go and let me just go and do a. You have a number of ways to actually do an inventory assessment on the machine. So I can go and look at Windows computers, Linux computers, VMware computers, Active Directory devices, all that kind of information. So you have a lot, not just desktop deployment, but a whole bunch of other stuff. And we have, so if I went and looked at Windows computers, and then we have some discovery methods. You know, so you don't have to just blat this out to all of your machines. You can use AD if you want to. You can use Windows networking protocols. You can go and use Config Manager. So if you have a Config Manager database that's gone and already discovered a bunch of machines, you can do that. You can scan an IP address range. You can import names from a file if there's only certain machines you want to do a scan on. So, and then you would go in and choose your Active Directory credentials, and away you go. And it'll go out, and it'll, there's nothing that it actually goes and puts on the machine. There's no agent or anything. It uses WMI to be able to get the data onto the machine. And you can drop this in, you know, run this from a laptop, go and collect the data, pull the laptop out, and away you go from there. So let's go back and see how my my Windows 7 machine is going. Okay, so my Windows 7 machine is finished with the update, so that's how fast. Now you notice we have saved all of our domain credentials. So as I log on to the machine, it's going to have all my domain credentials. Helps if you type the password right. And it's going to log on with those same credentials. Now, of course, the first time we actually run this, we're going to do everybody's favorite thing where we go, hi, we're setting things up for you. Now, the product team knows that everybody hates this. And we are actively working in Windows 10. It's a lot better than it was in previous versions of Windows. The time it actually takes for this process to go through has been reduced. I have seen cases where it takes a long time. That could be machines that are processing a lot of group policy settings or whatever. But most of the time, it doesn't take that long, and the statement that you're seeing on the screen is pretty accurate. So I'm going to let that go, and we'll come back to that in a second. But what I wanted to do is switch over to my admin machine, and I wanted to show you where we can actually go and defer updates. Okay, so essentially what I've got here is I've got a Windows 10 policy that I've got for on my contoso.com domain. And if I go down into Windows Components and I go into Windows Update, we have the option to defer. These are all the settings for Windows Update. And you can see the ones that are related to Windows 10 and stuff like that. So we have a new one in Windows 10 called Defer Upgrades. So if you want to go and enable that, you just enable this thing. And what this will do is this will allow you to defer that upgrade and for 4 months, and then allow that user to upgrade to the current branch for business within that 8-month time frame. Okay, so that allows us to change that, and there's some information about that. Simple policy to turn on, and then users won't be going out over the network. Now, of course, there's a couple of other things in regards to the update that I want to draw your attention to. If we go into settings on this machine, we can go into update and recovery. And we can go into advanced options. This is where the user would go in and just tick the box to defer upgrades. The other thing you'll notice is that we have an option to choose how your updates are delivered. We've added this new thing called peer delivery of updates. What this allows us to do is as updates, if you're distributing updates to your users and you're on a local area network, we can use those PCs on the network to grab portions of that those files to help speed up you know, the updates and stuff like that, so that we're not using our network, our internet connection to actually do that. You can, of course, turn this off if you want to, and, you know, some organizations might want to do that, but you have the option to choose. It's similar to what we did in branch cache in Windows Server to cache some of those updates onto machines and get users to pull those updates from those machines. Now, I'm going to go over to my management server, which has all the tools installed, and I'm going to start with MDT to show you how simple it is to create a task sequence to do the upgrade that I just did on my machine. So I have my operating system here. I've got my Windows 10 Enterprise and I want to be able to do a managed upgrade for those machines that are currently running Windows 7. I could go and, just like in, you know, image engineering before, you could go and add all your drivers, add your applications, do all that kind of stuff. Everything's pretty much the same there. But I want to show you the new task sequences that we have. It's a fairly straightforward way for us to do this. And we're going to call this Win10 Web. We'll say 06. And we can go and select template, and we have our standard templates that are in MDT, but you notice now what we have is what we call a standard client upgrade task sequence. So we would say that the upgrade task sequence is going to be for the majority of users that we do this. So we do a standard client upgrade task sequence, choose our WIM file that we want to deploy. We can put a MAC key if you've got a multiple a KMS key that you want to put in. I'm not going to specify one at this point in time. OS settings, and we'll call this Contoso. Admin password. Hit next on that, and it'll create your task sequence. And that's fine. So let's look at the one that I already created. Which is this one. And what you'll notice here is that this task sequence is very, very short. It is only four steps. When I ran that upgrade before, you notice that setup prep was running. This is that part of the task sequence. And then the upgrading task sequence itself, where we're going to copy scripts, where we're going to inject any drivers, and then we're going to call the setup.exe program from the Windows 10 setup, and we're going to upgrade Windows in place. Okay, we have some options here that we can go and do. We're going to capture any setup failures, and we're going to do some post-processing. And then we have the rollback capability, and a rollback capability allows us to back out. And that's it. It's a very, very simple process to do the upgrade and to do task sequences for managed in-place upgrades. If I switch over to Config Manager, so in Config Manager, this is technical preview version 3, I believe, of this, and this allows us to also do a task sequence for this. If I go over into software library and you notice I've got my operating system images, and we notice we have operating system upgrade packages now. So we have the ability to do upgrade packages in place. And if I go into the task sequence and create a task sequence within the Config Manager, and I can now do upgrade an operating system from an upgrade package. I'm going to call this Win10 5. And I'm going to browse to my upgrade package, which is this image that I already have. We can go and put our product key in, and away we go. We can include upgrades. We can include application standard stuff that we would do with image engineering. Hit next, and finish. And then when we go down into our task sequences themselves, we go and look at this task sequence. Again, it's a very, very straightforward process. It's not a long task sequence as we used to have in the past. So what we end up here is that we're running setup prep, where we're going to go and check readiness of the upgrade. And in this case, for moving to x64 systems, I've said 2 gigabytes. This is the default that it puts in because it knows what Windows 10 actually needs. And then we're going to upgrade the operating system, what upgrade package we're going to use, what edition, restart the computer. And then pretty much most of the rest of the process is actually going to be using the setup program for Windows 10. So most of that process is going to go through there. So I'm going to show you what that looks like in the slides themselves, because I have a recording of of what it looks like from a Config Manager perspective. Actually, can I start that? I stopped that screen. Can I start up that sharing screen again? Is that possible to do? I'll go to the one at the end. Looks like I can't do that. Anyway, essentially, when I logged onto that machine, I'll tell you what's kind of happening in the background, is I've logged back onto that Windows 7 machine, and it's just telling me that the operating system deployment completed successfully, and we've ended up with our Windows 10 upgrade over the top. It took about a half an hour. I did it during this webinar, so it's pretty fast. It's not a real difficult process, and we feel that this is going to help organizations really accelerate their deployments. So here's a machine that's running Windows 7, and I'm going to kick off a config manager task sequence, and you notice the user has their background. This is actually a picture of the Commons at Microsoft's campus in Redmond in the U.S. And the users, we're going to deploy that package out to the user, and we're going to do a similar thing that we did before. Here we're running our in-place upgrade. We're going to do a bunch of pre-setup routines. We're then, once we've actually done all those checks, and you can see where the action that we're actually running here is to call the setup.exe program and do a setup.exe of Windows 10, and then essentially we're going to hand it over to the Windows 10 setup process. Now, if you've done an install of Windows 10, you've probably seen this window before, and there's three stages now in the release of Windows 10, not four like we had in the beta time frame. We have the first part, which is configuring settings, and then the setting up part is where we're laying down the Windows.old, where basically the configuring settings is where we move everything to the Windows.old directory, and then the setting up is where we're laying down the new image of Windows 10, and then the next part where we're applying PC settings is where we're moving everything back from Windows.old, registry settings, all those settings that the user had, back into that new Windows installation of Windows 10 and getting everything back to the way it was before. And we're using the user state migration tools in the setup to allow us to do that. Excuse me. And then this last part where it says setting up a few more things, that's been taken out mainly because it was a little bit too cryptic. A lot of people didn't really understand what it was. And we took that out and we left it to those three settings. And then once we're at the end of the setup, the user logs in. And the most important part is that they have their background bitmap. We all know that users, you know, are very important for that sort of stuff. And then, you know, that their applications are still there. And in this case, the user's got some applications on the desktop and pinned to the taskbar. And they want it to be the same exact way it was before. And then we know that from most of the people that are using Windows 7, this will be a very smooth transition. They'll have their start menu, and that's the most important part. So when we talk about the second stage that we're talking about, which is provisioning. Provisioning allows us to take off-the-shelf hardware, apply a very small package, and then have that device be ready for productive use. And it came over from what we did with Windows Phone. With phones today, most organizations do not re-image a phone when they're giving those to employees. The user will get their phone, and then they will probably, after that fact, they will actually most likely connect to an Exchange server, and at that point is when we actually push down policies to that machine. What provisioning to that particular phone, what provisioning allows us to do, both for phones and for PCs, is allow us to secure the device right before it's actually used in production. So it allows us to put all those details before the user even uses it on the enterprise network to make sure the device is ready for productive use. And this is just some screenshots of the image and configuration designer. So essentially what we do is that we go and create a new project. And in this case, we're going to call this enterprise because we're going from enterprise to, from professional to enterprise. And then what we actually do at that point is we choose what Windows edition we want to use, and that is essentially either common things to the across all versions of Windows, versions that are common to phone or IoT devices will support with that. And then what we can do at that point in time is we can choose, we can import a provisioning package that we already have, and then we can go and set some settings. And for enterprises, the most important thing is this upgrade edition product key, allowing us to switch the version of Windows from Pro to Enterprise without having to apply a new image to the device. And that's, in, you know, allowing another way for us to accelerate and help people to deploy Windows faster in their organizations and to support using those BYOD type scenarios. Then we just give the package a name, we build out the package, and then we can, obviously we can do package encryption for the device or package signing if you need to make that package secure. And then we provision that package, and then we make that package, the PPKG file and some other XML files, available to the user's device. And we have a number of ways that we can get that down to the device. And then once you're done, the user has their device, and they can use it in the enterprise. And it allows us to take these devices, say that they're, you know, they might be 8-inch devices, they might be smaller tablets that users want to use as a secondary device. We can then use that device in the enterprise itself. So provisioning is not imaging the device or re-imaging the device. It just allows us to do bulk enrollment to MDMs, do bulk enrollments into Active Directory, and then we have flexible methods. We'll have next week we'll be running a whole session on provisioning, and we'll go through a lot more details of how this actually works, showing you how to move a device from professional to enterprise. Well, we'll show you that next week. So if you are an IT pro, and I'm going to go through a couple of things that are different with Windows 10. We have some enhancements to the existing tools that are available. So there's a new assessment, there's a new ADK that includes support for Windows 10, but also having down-level support for Windows 7. There are some minor updates to System Center 2012 and 2012 R2 to add support for test sequences to do upgrades. The Config Manager team has actually done a blog post and has some sample test sequences that you can import into 2012. And there's some minor updates to MDT that was made available to add support. Now, if you've done existing deployments, it will be very easy, feel natural for you. You can drop in a Windows 10 image and create that and use it for your wipe and load deployments. Now, the ADK, there's a couple of things that are new within the ADK itself. So there's the new WCID tool, which is the Windows Imaging and Configuration Designer. There's an updated version of the USMT. It supports Windows Vista and above as the source operating system. And it has new capabilities to create provisioning packages to add apps. DISM has some new tools. There's new commands to add provisioning packages, and there's also ability to do Compact OS, which I'll talk about in a second, which is the evolution change to Windows PE. So reducing, one of the things that we got, what we had to actually do around the Windows 8.1 timeframe is look at ways that we could actually reduce the size that Windows actually takes up. And with Windows 10, we have a new Compact OS option. And this is traditionally going to be given to OEMs to allow them to reduce the size that Windows takes up on their machines that have 32 gig and smaller. And we'll end up saving about 3 gigabytes of space. So what we do is it's a simplified deployment option. We essentially compress all the Windows files to save disk space, and it's transparent from a performance perspective, and to the user, they don't notice any difference. So WinBoot kind of came out around the Windows 8.1 timeframe, and WinBoot, at that time, there was a lot of devices, smaller 8-inch devices or 7-inch devices that had 16 gig space. And by the time you curated the recovery partition and the Windows installation files, then you wouldn't have much space on that device. So we have introduced the Compact On switch, and it's DISM/apply image, point it to the image you want, and then put /compact:on, and that takes care of all the details for that as well. And it can be implemented after the fact if you have the ADK installed on your machine. And essentially what it does is it uses the standard partition structure. So what we end up with is we don't have to have that separate partition to do recovery. So what we do is we use the SXS folder to do recovery of the operating system and it's all stored on the same volume. Okay, so and we're ending up with a disk space savings of around about 3 gigabytes or so on x64 systems. And if you have the ADK, you can run it, and you can reduce the size of your space on your machine. I'm not going to have time today to show you the Compact OS, so I won't go through that particular demo. But I wanted, because there's a couple of things I wanted to just close with today before we finish up, because we've got about 5 minutes to go. We also have a new recovery process as well when we talk about reducing the footprint itself. So from a recovery process, we don't actually use any extra disk space on the machine. We use that SXF folder to reconstruct the OS, and there's no separate partition. The way that we preserve updates is we do all but the last 28 days of the Windows updates are kept. New ones get discarded just in case. Those are the reason for the reset. And then recent driver updates will also be discarded. Language packs will be preserved. Apps that do customizations that get preserved are apps and drivers that that are captured into provisioning packages. Provisioning packages also that OEMs do will be automatically restored. And provisioning Windows apps, the apps themselves are restored to the original state. So the before there was any updates to the apps within the store. So that's how that will actually work. Now, things that are not preserved. So Win32 applications are discarded. All user-installed Windows applications from the Windows Store are discarded, and new versions of provisioning apps to be reinstalled. Now, we also are going to cover this in the mobile device management section in a couple of weeks' time, but just to quickly touch on it is that we have a new remote wipe capability in allowing us to not only wipe phones, but also do a full reset on PCs as well, using an MDM such as Microsoft Intune. So we're able to actually do full resets on those as well. Now, a couple of things on the tools perspective. MDT Update 1 supports ADK. It works with the new ADK for that. It has that new upgrade task sequence. It works with, it's coming soon for Config Manager as well. Some of the additional enhancements, we support split WIM support for media, and that's useful for UEFI systems. And there was obviously some bug fixes that were in this update. Now, with Config Manager itself, one of the things that you're going to have to consider from a support perspective, if you are running on Config Manager 2007, we don't support Windows 10 deployment with that version. You have to be on 2012 SP2, 2012 R2, SP1, or above to support both management and deployment. System Center vNext obviously has some updated task sequences. We can bring those task sequences into 2012 as well. and if you look at some infrastructure updates, there is a update that you're going to need to add to your KMS servers. And if you go and look at this, this came out in the last week or two, I think it was. So it supports now adding support for Windows 10. To allow you to activate those systems with your KMS server. So make sure that you go and grab that update, because you're going to need that update to support if you're doing activation within KMS. The support for 8.1 and all that has already come out, so that is actually available now. So that is going to actually be, so make sure you get that KB article for that. And lastly, Windows Server compatibility. So things you want to actually be aware of is that Windows 10 works with all supported Windows Server versions. You need to be running Active Directory Schema 2008 R2 or above. Windows Server Update has some new targeting groups and has support for using and categorizing for Windows 10 updates. There's new group policy settings that are actually available from our download center. Go to grouppolicy.biz, and that has a link to do that. One of the things you want to make sure of is that if you're applying security templates via GPO, don't use Windows 7 templates for that. Make sure you're using the Windows 10 templates. And make sure if you're using WMI filters, make sure they work as you're expecting them to actually work as well. The last thing that's been updated is the Microsoft's Desktop Optimization Pack. So if you have access to this, There are some updates to this that have been added. I should have changed this from available soon. It is available now. AGPM, Advanced Group Policy Management, has been bumped to Service Pack 3, and it has support for PowerShell in that now, in AGPM, Advanced Group Policy Management. AppB's been bumped slightly. Dart has been updated, which is our diagnostics and recovery tool set to support Windows 10. MBAM has been slightly updated, and then UEV has been slightly updated as well. So with that, I'm going to thank you for attending today's webinar. We want to make sure that we get you out on time. So we are finished for today. So I thank you very much for attending today's webinar. And next week, we are going to be covering provisioning, where we'll go into some more details about that. Andrew, who's been on, who has been on the call answering calls, he had to leave to do another webinar. He is going to be running that session next week, so please have a look out for that. But with that, I'll thank you for attending today, and have a good afternoon, and we'll see you at an upcoming webinar. Thanks very much.